Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, Jeff Harry from Find Your Play talks about rejection and racism.
Are you going to Ryan's pool party? Everyone who's anyone is going to be there. So I put on my acid wash jean swim trunks because they had a pool where I could play. I douse myself with a half a bottle of Drakkar Noir. Going to the pool party, going to the pool party, going to the party. And as we get 10 feet to the entrance, we hear people arguing. And someone says, get the fuck out of here. We aren't letting any into this party.
International speaker Jeff Harry talks all about rejection. Plus, we discuss finding your play. Stay close.
Hey, my name is Jeff Harry, and you're listening to Story Worthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a brand new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys had a chance to listen to Monica Piper last week. I got to tell you, Monica Piper, I've always heard her name, comedian and a comedy writer. She's written on a bunch of sitcoms. I've always heard her name, but I never got to talk with her. I never met her before. And anyway, finally, I got her, and she was stunning. Jeff, you haven't heard the episode yet because it goes up this Tuesday and now we're ahead of time. But anyway, Monica Piper, the title of her show was Breaking Promises. It doesn't sound that funny, right? But you have to realize she's written on all these sitcoms and she has a one-woman show and a special on cable, and she's just a really bright woman. And her Breaking Promises story, it's about her being a single mom and adopting a son. That's what it's all about. Mm. And right after she adopted her son, she got a writing job on the show Roseanne.
Oh, the in the 80s.
Yeah. And it was the fourth season of Roseanne. Do you remember how hot that show was, Jeff?
Mm-hmm.
That show was like on fire at that time. So she's got her baby she just adopted, and then she gets hired to write on Roseanne. What are you going to do, right? Because Roseanne, the hours, seriously, were 18 hours a day. They were in the writer's room 15 to 18 hours a day.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. But anyway, and then she's got the baby. And so anyway, it is a really poignant story and it's super funny. And anyway, go back, you guys. Listen to Monica Piper from last week. An excellent episode. But not today, because today you're here with me and my new friend, Jeff Harry. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, what's up?
I got to tell you, I don't do this often, you know, just pulling out a person from the universe. And so, you know, I'm just saying you're special. That's all.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, your topic and what you do for a living is so unique. And I never heard of anybody doing it, but it makes a lot of sense. It's all about, it's about rediscovering play, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And the whole idea of how do you take on really challenging issues through play? Like, how do you have a hard conversation through play? All that stuff.
Well, I don't understand why you would have a hard conversation through play. I mean, I don't get that.
So I run a workshop called How Do You Deal With A-Holes at Work? I run a workshop with my friend Gary Ware, and we've run this in Boston and Australia, and we were going to run it at South by Southwest, and it was called How to Deal With A-Holes at Work Through Play. And it was all about how do you address them? How do you like take them on? How do you like eradicate a-holes from the workplace because they need to go?
What do you do?
Oh, you want me to get into it? I can get into it.
Today, you bring forth the topic rejection. And so I really want to get to your story. And I want to talk about rejection because I'm super good at it.
Yeah.
I mean, rejection, not talking about rejection. It, but actual rejection. I'm very good at it. What do you mean by, I mean, can you just summarize in, you know, a couple of sentences, how do you take care of a-holes at work?
Well, it's the combination of a few different things. It's working with your colleagues to stand up to the person at meetings and take up the space that that person usually takes up. That's the first stage. It's the second stage of actually confronting that person. Yeah, a lot of a-holes don't know that they are being a-holes. And then the third stage, if that doesn't work, after you've actually confronted them, is then to approach like your management or your boss and ask them, do you want this person over the team? Because you could have the brilliant jerk or you can have the team, and you, but you can't have both. And there's even the Navy SEALs don't keep the top person if it's destroying the team. And then finally, and this is probably the biggest one, is you have to address your inner critic, your inner a-hole, because once you address that person, once that mean person is saying something to you and it's triggering you, what it's triggering you is your inner critic is thinking like, oh, is that true? Am I dumb? Do I not deserve this job? You know, should I not be speaking up in meetings? But if you're able to address your inner critic and deal with that, when Chad says something to you, be like, Chad, that's super disrespectful. Don't ever talk to me that way. And when you say that publicly in front of everybody else, everyone else gets really empowered and is like, yeah, I'm not taking that from Chad either. And then Chad has a choice. Chad either has to change his attitude or... Exactly.
Well, this is all super interesting because this is what's happening with Donald Trump now. And when reporters call him on it, like that woman a couple weeks ago who said,
if you don't check kid that is being toxic, they become that, right? Like if you don't check them when they're being super disrespectful, when they're in third grade or in seventh grade or in high school or college, when they're being an a-hole, then they, like Trump, just run amok. So it's not only good for you to check that person wherever they're at, but also it's good for everyone else that interacts with that person going forward.
I find this absolutely fascinating and so smart. It's hard to believe that what you just said, it's just so interesting. Mm-hmm. In other words, then you have created a career out of teaching that.
So the play,
because that sounds like psychology.
Oh, so the play aspect is we have people practice what they would actually say. And we have them embody what an a-hole actually is too. So we have them be like, all right, now you act like that person so that you know how it feels. Because when we run some of these workshops, some people are like, ooh, I like that feeling. And other people are like, ooh, I hate this. Like, I hate saying no to everything and being mean, right? And then later on, we practice having them like, what are you actually going to say? How are you going to actually say it? You know, and really make it awkward because that is how it's going to play out, right? So that they actually, just like practice, like when you're practicing for like a game, then when you're finally in the game, you've tried out so many of the scenarios, you're ready. Yep.
Well, that's confronting anybody in life or anytime you have to say something difficult. I don't want to talk about this, but I will say that when my ex-husband and I decided to split, we had to decide what we're going to tell this five-year-old and how are we going to say it? So it was like, okay, I'm going to say this sentence, then you say this sentence, then I say this sentence, and then you say, okay, let's get ready to go for dinner. Like have a plan what to do afterward. And then we just listen to her. So we say all the sentences and then you listen. But that was like, honestly, one of the worst moments of my life. Like I had an out of body experience. I was so sick to my stomach.
Did the practice help?
But it was a truthful thing that had to be said. And I find that so interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, of course it did. I mean, I was sick inside, but I was like, put myself in an actress mode. You know, just like say these words and then stop.
Yep.
That's the main thing is know when to stop and listen. I find all this so fascinating. I am so glad you're here today. This is going to be really fun. Now, you do bring forth the topic rejection. And I just said I'm really good at it because obviously in Los Angeles, you know, it's really hard to imagine the – and I don't mean to say competition because it's not, I'm not competing with anybody.
Right.
I just know there's a lot of people in the same game. I am just competing with myself, but then I've been doing this for 23 years. So now I've gained more confidence, which is essentially, by the way, what you're getting at, which is how to confront that inner child, how to give that child confidence. Like, I'm a mom. Are you a dad?
Oh boy,
your kids are going to be
I've
so
taught
lucky
like over 10,000
when you do have kids.
Do
you know what
career,
I mean?
So
you're going to be like the best dad ever. Wow. That's fantastic. Well, my daughter, you know, I teach her to use her words now, you know, and most of the moms I know how to do that as well and teach their children to say, no, thank you, or please step back, or I don't want to be touched, or whatever the sentence is. But, you know, now, but then again, I'm in a really progressive area. I'm in Los Angeles. And so, you know, it's easier for me to do it. And I hear my daughter talking to other people and saying, no, thank you.
No, thank you.
Like that was hard. We didn't know how to say that when I was a kid. We couldn't even say that.
It's so interesting now looking at kids because I keep saying this in a lot of some of the interviews that I do. It's just like kids really watch your actions. They don't listen to your words at all. Like at all. They're just watching your actions. So I don't know. Some of the things that I think are the best things a parent can do for a kid, just from all of the teaching that I've done, is when they just are super vulnerable. Because when do you ever see your parent vulnerable? Like, I only saw my parents as like these stoic, you know, heroes in my life. And I never knew how to be imperfect, I guess.
Well, you know, I'm a single mom. I mean, her dad's very much in her life, but, you know, essentially, when she's here, I'm by myself, of course. And so as a single mom, she has seen me go through every emotion you can imagine. You know, when my dad passed, I went through a breakup, whatever. And I tell her all the time, I'm like, Alabama, this is sadness. This is grief. And it's very normal. And mommy's going to be better in about 10 minutes, you know, or mommy, give me a second. You know, like it's very normal for me to be sad right now. This is nothing, you know, to be scared about. It's normal. And so I try to normalize every emotion. And so she sees it.
See, I think that's magical because I don't think that happens enough. You know, I do a lot of positive psychology, you know, training and things like that. And a lot of times we find that people always are trying to be happy. They're always trying to be sad. They're always trying to be one emotion. And what I've learned is like, you can be multiple emotions at the same time and it's super complex, but that's where all the nuance and the goodness and the deliciousness is, right? It's like Pixar's Inside Out. Like I remember when I was at my dad's funeral, I was surrounded by all his brothers that hadn't seen each other in like 30 years since their mom died. And I was all joyful at the same time. And then I felt real guilty because I was like, oh, I'm so joyful at a funeral of my dad's. And I was like, wait, I can feel both. And I think we forget about that when we think in such black and white, you know, right or wrong ways.
Man, you're so smart. Really, it's really, really bright. And I'm so excited that you made a living out of this. What was your college? What was that? What degree did you get there?
So I saw the movie Big when I was a kid and started writing toy companies when I was in fifth grade and then went to school for mechanical engineering because a toy company wrote me. I should have never listened, but I did that. And then, I was in the toy industry and I hated it.
Wow. How interesting. It's more business, right? It's not creative.
Well, there was no play, you know, like I was expecting Big, right? Where like there's high fives and kids are running around and everyone's playing with toys and everyone's super cool. And I felt like everyone was selling microwaves. Like it really didn't matter what they were selling. So I left it and then had my quarter life crisis and found a job on Craigslist teaching kids engineering with Lego with like seven other nerdy guys. And then we grew it by just finding other nerds that wanted to play with us. And it became like this huge thing. And there were like 400 of us. And we would pick cities to go to based off of whether we felt they were super fun or not. Like, let's go to Austin, Texas. Who wants to go to Boise? Nobody. Okay, let's keep going. You know, like we would just pick. So we had no business plan, but I think I realized through that experience, it was just like, oh, I should be, my play is leading me. My curiosity is leading me to like doing the cool stuff, like the interesting stuff that I love. So I'm just going to keep following that. And because I just believe no one knows what they're doing. We're all making it up as we go along. And then I just hate it when I see someone like that's an expert that's like, let me tell you how to do it. And you're like, you don't know. It's a pandemic. No one knows what to do right now. Stop acting. don't tell me you have an e-course on the pandemic. You don't have that. Like, so I'm just like, come on. So yeah. So wow. that's just following my play and following my curiosity has brought me joy.
I've told my daughter many times that I know a lot of adults that aren't bright at all. And then I know a lot of kids that are super bright.
Exactly. And know? I sometimes feel like kids are better teachers than adults because they know how to be present. They can read through all the bullshit. Yeah. They can pick out bullshit better than we can.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're so
honest. And they can be super honest with you. Like, they don't hold back.
Yeah, they don't hold back. They really don't. My daughter loves to criticize me and just to do something that'll make me, you know, it'll make me hurt, you know? So the other day she says to me, "Hey, Mama, you say too much in your podcast." And it's like, wow, why don't you just cut me in the throat? Go ahead, do it. She always says things like, and you know, she doesn't necessarily like my boyfriend right now. And so she says, "Mom, it's 2020. You don't need a man."
Ooh, wow, that's speaking truth right there. Preach.
I'm telling you. Preach.
And here's the thing. It's just like, I find most adults just so boring. Because they ask questions like weather and what do you do for a living? And it doesn't mean anything at all. And just like, it's always trying to one-up each other. And the few adults that I can hang out with are comedians because whole goal is to lift the veil on all the bullshit. And they're just like, this is stupid. All of this that we're doing is stupid and it's all a facade.
Yeah, it's true. Comedians immediately go to just cut the shit. What is the truth?
Exactly.
And they don't laugh. They just look at you and say, "Okay, well, that is funny." No, it's not funny.
Yeah. They're like, "Oh, that's super funny." And you're like, "Well, you're not laughing." "Yeah, no, but I like it. I like where you're going." "I like where you're going with it. I saw what you did there. I saw what you did. You brought it back. Okay, I get it."
Well, again, about rejection, you know, for me, I'm just thinking about what I've had career-wise, how much rejection I've taken and how I've had to get just comfortable with that feeling, right? And just be comfortable with being consistent, being who I am and doing my best and realizing that at the end of the day, it never had anything to do with me except for the fact unless I produce it.
Exactly.
If I produce it, then it can have to do with me. But if you don't produce it, then you're just a pawn in somebody else's game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also have realized because I make a lot of stupid videos, as soon as I put them out, I'll have comments, you know, and people arguing in the comments and then I'll be, "Oh, no one's even talking about me. They're not even talking about, they're doing their own thing." It's just like, they've totally forgotten that this, it was on my page that they're doing this. So
that's
I'm like,
so
whatever.
Funny.
So now when I just create stuff, I just like leave it out there and I'm like, it's out there. It's not about me anymore because I'm making something else now.
Unless you're just looking at your Twitter, you know, comments because you're reading like through it at night. I don't know. Sometimes I like to go through that stuff just to read comments and stuff, but you can't put any weight on it, of course.
Right. Because what is it? Someone said, I've read this so many different times, but someone's opinion about you has nothing to do with you.
Right.
Right. And that what they're arguing about something from childhood.
Right.
And they just so happen to be channeling it at you at this very moment.
The other day I was on Twitter and Rose McGowan is always criticizing Alyssa Milano. I guess they have this really huge beef. I'm not really exactly sure because I don't know either of their work really, except they were on that one show. Anyway, they were on a show together. Anyway, Rose McGowan just tweeted something really nasty about Alyssa Milano. And in the comments, I wrote, "Rose, that was totally unnecessary and says more about you than her." And I got about 180 likes on that.
Because you spoke the truth right there. I mean, but that's always true, right? That's always true.
It is. It really is.
Like whenever I'm super angry at someone, I'm like, why am I so angry? Why am I obsessed with this person right now? Oh, it's because they remind me of me. Or like, oh, they remind me of a younger me or whatever the case. But something is triggering me and it has nothing to do with them.
And we only have so much space in our head. When you are angry or mad or you have any contempt against somebody, that you're giving that feeling real estate. in your head.
I completely agree. And I even say this is like when a lot of people say, oh, I had a bad day. I think of in psychology, they talk about how thoughts last between 9 seconds and 90 seconds. And it's like, no, you had one bad moment and then you ran it in your head 1,000 times. And then you looked for other, you primed your brain to look for other bad moments throughout the day. And it's just like, you could do something different with that. Like when I make a stupid video at the beginning of my day, that has no productive value, it primes my day to be like, all right, let's play here. And then everything else is better, you know? So it's just like, just catch yourself because your inner critic is so mean. It's just so mean, dude.
Yeah. I want to say one more thing and we're going to get to your story. But my buddy Hannes Finney, he's a comedian. And he goes, let me tell you something, Christine. You are not as good as you think you are. And you're not as bad as you think you are. So just get over it. You know, he just lays it out.
That's awesome. It's just like most people are not thinking about you. Just don't worry about it. You know, it would be.
I say that to my daughter. I say, just by the way, so you know, Alabama, we all care super much because we're your family. But anybody else, maybe they do, maybe they don't. Who cares? We right. want you to be happy. You know. All right. So listen, I want to remind everybody that the Story Worthy Hour of Power is going really strong every Sunday night, 6 p.m. Pacific time. And as you know, I have myself and 4 other storytellers. You're going to have to come and do this, Jeff, as well, because it's super fun. And I'm in my 21st week of this straight through. Wow. Yeah. So I'm entertaining America through this pandemic. And not just America. Of course, you can tune in from anywhere in the world. It's a Zoom show. And anyway, head over to storyworthypodcast.com for who the guest is this week. I'll definitely book you, Jeff. I'd love you to come on.
Oh, sweet. I will say this too. People are not giving enough credit to comedians for basically being the therapist during the pandemic. Because the amount of Netflix shows that people are downloading, right? Yeah. And like Hannibal Buress with his tour and all those people. I mean, basically like Jim Gaffigan people, you can eat with Jim Gaffigan. He has like a dinner every night with his family. Like I watched like 300 people were at it and I was there too. And I'm like, what am I doing? So like people need to be paying more money to comedians because we're getting through it because of them.
Well, you know, comedians want to be on stage. Comedians, obviously, they need that payoff of a laugh. And we are creative people who have that ingenuity to work with it, you know? And so a lot of people in the beginning of the pandemic were saying, you know, I'm not doing the Zoom thing. It doesn't work. I can't take it. But now they're coming around because it's either that or, you know, I'd like to say then you're going to go to Australia or Canada or Europe, but guess what? They ain't going to take us because we're filthy Americans.
Exactly.
All right, you guys, he's here right now, Jeff Harry. He's an international speaker who shows individuals and companies how to play. You heard him talking about it. He has worked with Google, Microsoft, Southwest Airlines, Adobe, the NFL. That's ironic that you would teach the NFL to play.
Yeah, it's super interesting.
What was that? What? Tell me what that was.
Oh, well, we were working with a lot of the kids. We ran this event called Huddle for Autism, or ran part of it for the Eagles. And then we did something with the Chicago Bears. But it was a lot about just like getting more of the kids of the community to play with the players and just the team.
That is such a beautiful thing. How nice. And that shows them exercise as well. Obviously.
Exactly. Right. Right.
You also worked with Facebook and you worked with Amazon and you help their staffs infuse more play into the day-to-day work. Now, do you encourage like ping pong tables in the office and stuff like that? Is that what you're talking about?
So that is something that I think a lot of people do and then they think that's good enough. And a lot of people don't play ping pong or pool or any of those things because they don't want to look like they are being lazy. Right. Uh-huh. And that's the ironic part is just like, look, we made these things. We put a slide in. No one's using it, but we put this slide in here.
That
and it's just
is
like,
so
and it's
funny.
Like, nah, dude, that's not what we're talking about. Because when we like the reason why I created a lot of these workshops was because businesses would talk about creativity and collaboration and innovation. And you'd walk in there and it was so tense. And you're like, there's no way anyone can be creative. It's so, you know, no one can take risks in here. And my play mentor, Gwen Gordon, talks about how you have to soothe yourself in order to play. And you actually adopt your nervous system from the person that took care of you the most, right? So you have to calm yourself. So if everyone is just, you know, feeling anxiety at work, no one's going to take a risk and no one's going to like come up with some really dope creative ideas because they know they're going to get knocked down by the a-hole in the room. So our job was to be like, well, let's address the harder issues, like, you know, not just toxicity, but also are people being racist at work? And how do you have that conversation? Or, you know, is your inner critic showing up and blah, or office politics, or the dumbest thing. But we would address this stuff, deal with that stuff. And then people feel calm enough to actually start playing and taking risks.
That's all so smart. That is just such an intelligent train of thought. And I think you're going to really be, well, you are successful, but
absolutely. I mean, it's a lot of, I tie a lot of play and positive psychology together because it's all about in my, at the end of the day, I just want, like comedians, I just want to lift the veil of BS at work so that, that people can be more real because right now there's a ton of code switching and people just pretending that, you know, they like their job when they hate it.
Isn't that the truth? Now, wait, one more thing. You said you get your nervous system from the person who raised you?
Well, you think about it. You learn how to calm yourself down by the person that also tried to calm you down until you can adopt a new way of learning how to calm yourself, right? So if you think about the person that took care of you the most and think about their tendencies, and you adopted at least some of those tendencies. So what we sometimes do in some of our play workshops is we have to do a lot of exercises just to get people out of their head, right? Because adults are so fixated on results and then have them do a lot of silly things so that they're calm enough before we go into like the real challenging play of the day.
Is that why in improv classes they make you be like an animal and that stupid stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of those things. Because they're trying to bring back that child that's been wanting to play for so long, but it has all this bullshit that's stacked up. And I say this a lot, kids, by the time they're teens, have heard 40,000 no's. Like at least 40,000 no's. Maybe like 7,000 to 8,000 yeses, but it's more around 40,000 no's. So it's just like, no wonder you're so scared. You've been asking for permission your whole life at school, at home, you know, so you don't want to take risks. So you have to get rid of all of that. And how do you do that? You start wiggling your body and acting like an idiot. And then you kind of like let go of how you look. And then you start not caring what people think of you. And that's when you can actually play.
Wow, Jeff, you've got so much knowledge. Holy cow. You were also featured in the New York Times article, How Do We Add More Play to Our Grown-Up Life, Even Now? And you were also featured on Soul Pancake, the San Francisco Chronicle, and CNN. You guys, you've got to check out his website, rediscoveryourplay.com, and also find Jeff over on Twitter at Jeff Harry Plays. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Jeff Harry.
Okay, I'm 12 years old. It is the first day of seventh grade. I've already been sitting through so many periods of class and I've been waiting for recess so I can play Foursquare. I love Foursquare. It's all I wanted to do all summer. I'm so excited to play Foursquare that I'm singing a song about Foursquare as I walk down the hall. Gonna play some Foursquare, gonna play some Foursquare, gonna play some Foursquare.
Foursquare.
I'm outside of the playground ready to play Foursquare, but no one is on the square. You can't play Foursquare with one square. It's literally in the name. Everyone is in the courtyard just talking. Why is everyone just talking? So I go over to Matt and Jimmy and I ask, hey, you want to play some Foursquare? And they're like, nah. Did you know Ryan Matthews is going out with Ashley? They made it to first base. I'm like, first base? And then, Matt,
I don't see anyone on first base. In fact, no one's on the baseball field at all. Nah, man, it's first base kissing. Also, do you know that Mark is now going out with Sarah? Wait, so do you think they'd like to play Foursquare? I'm just trying to get a count on how many people want to play Foursquare. But apparently, no one wants to play Foursquare because everyone is playing a new game called Being Cool. What? I don't even know Being Cool is that certain people have already been selected as the cool kids. Wait, was there an election? I didn't receive a mail-in ballot during the summer. This game is rigged. Certain people are already anointed as the king and queens of cool, which did not include me. But I just wanted to play Foursquare. But after so many recesses of sitting in the squares, feeling alone, I finally succumbed. And I'm like, okay, I'll play the cool game because I just wanted to belong. You see, I'm living in a very white Chicago suburb. I am one of 30 kids of color at the school. I'm an awkward, nerdy, Vincentian, Caribbean, Black Filipino kid. So I go up to my friends, I'm like, so what do I need to be cool? First off, I need new clothes. So I buy these Z Cavaricci acid wash jeans, some Gerbo shirts, but the last thing I need, I can't get. All the cool boys have long, luscious bangs. Being so long, they flick them out of their way, like, excuse me, I can't hear you behind these luscious bangs. I'm Black and Filipino. My hair doesn't do that. It's shaped like a microphone. So I steal my sister's Vidal Sassoon mousse, and I pour so much of it into my hair and push it down so it would freeze, creating a frozen fake bang. Little did I know that mousse dries up over time. So by fifth period, my frozen bang has now turned into a raccoon butt growing out of my forehead. Well, hello, ladies. So one day someone comes up to me and says, you should date Hannah. She's Asian, you're Asian, so you'd be cute together. This is how white my school is. They are pairing up the races. So I'm like, okay, if that's what makes me cool, right? All right, that's cool. So Hannah gives me this triangle note to start our relationship. In the note is a map explaining that we will be exchanging two triangle notes per day. Also, we will be having a call at night at 7 p.m. on the dot. Do you know how hard it is to fold a triangle note? Do you know what is even harder than that? Trying to figure out what to say to someone when you've never spoken to a girl before. She calls and asks, so how was your day? And I'm like, it's inside the note. I wake up in the morning with anxiety trying to figure out what will I write her because nothing has happened between our 7 p.m. phone call and 8:30 a.m. besides me sleeping. Then 2 weeks in, she says she's breaking up with me. Wait, what? But what about all those notes? So now, 3/4 of the year has passed. I got the clothes. I got the frozen bangs that still look like a raccoon's butt. I've now dated and I'm newly single. So now I'm in. Now I'm cool, right? But no. Then Matt Johnson comes up to me and he goes, are you going to Ryan's pool party? Everyone who's anyone is going to be there. That's it. If I go to the party, I'm in. I will finally arrive. I will finally belong. I will finally be in with the in crowd. Oh, by the way, it's invite only. Invite only? What does that even mean? You have to know someone to get in. Wait, really? So I spend the whole week begging people if I can go with them. Finally, I ask Antonio Santiago and Joey Villagomez if I can go with them, and they say, maybe. So for the next 2 weeks, I do whatever I can to get them to say yes. I bring them lunch. I carry their book bags. I become their triangle note courier. Finally, it's the night of the party. And I'm going. I will be going to the best party of my lifetime. So I put on my acid wash jean swim trunks because they had a pool where I could play. I douse myself with a half a bottle of Drakkar Noir. Antonio's mom drives us. It's already dark, but hot enough that the pool will be awesome. I'm in the car, singing quietly to myself, going to the pool party, going to the pool party, going to the party. There's already a crowd of people gathering in front of his house as we pull up. Because it's the party of the year, everybody. We get dropped off 20 feet before the entrance, and we come out of the car all cool, doing a smooth, cool, I'm so dope walk. And as we get 10 feet to the entrance, we hear people arguing. Carl, Keith, Ron, and a few other people are trying to get into the party, but they aren't being let in. Now, Carl, Keith, and Ron happen to be black like me. And then people start pushing each other, and someone says, get the fuck out of here. We aren't letting any niggers into this party. And I feel like this gut punch to my stomach. Like, I'm thinking, like, I'm a nigger. Are they going to let me into this party? And, like, my heart just sank, like, to my spleen. And I felt like water had, like, filled up my knees. And I was like, it just froze. And I'm 5 feet from the entrance, and I can't move a muscle. And then Antonio turns and says, come on, we'll be fine. And I'm thinking, no, you'll be fine. I'm going to be left out of this party to sit on the curb. I don't even know where I am. I can't even find my way home from here. So I slowly stumble up to the front. And there's a group of white guys. And they look at Antonio. And they look at Joey, and then they look at me. And they go, is he black? And I just stand there looking at them and not saying a word. Nah, he's Latino. And with this nonchalant attitude, they just wave us through. It's no big deal to them. But for me, this is everything. And a wave of relief comes over me. And as I'm crossing the threshold through the door, I'm anticipating this immense amount of joy to just fill me. But as soon as I walk across, I feel as if I abandoned myself outside on the curb. There are 50 people in the party talking, laughing, and I can't hear a sound. I'm just filled with so much disgust and shame, and I just want to hide. So I go to the pool where no one is playing, and I just sink to my neck in that cold water thinking, I gave it up all for this? I feel lonelier than I've ever felt in my entire life. So that day, I made a promise. I gave up being cool. I stayed in my basement, and I just played my weird games. And then I think after a while, I started inviting some of my friends to play my weird games. And word started to get out that if you go and hang out in Jeff's basement, you don't have to be cool. Every weekend, we make up games, pile up mattresses to build forts and throw ourselves at them, which was my new version of Foursquare. And it was the most fun I ever had, playing these ridiculous games in my basement. And that's when I realized that thing I've been searching for the entire time is right here. When I am with people I like, doing the stuff I find the most fun for me, this is where I belong.
Wow, man, that's a great story. Holy cow. It went in such a different direction than I thought. Like, I thought when you got out of the car at the party, first of all, I thought you were going to say, I had a beach towel around my neck, you know, and then say something like, you know, I may as well have had one of those ducky floaties on, you know, that that was the thing. And I thought that, you know, you were going in with a sense of play and then in the party that nobody would be swimming. Because often when you go to parties, especially here in LA, nobody is swimming. It's a pool party.
No one's playing. Right.
Nobody's swimming, and you could tell they're not going to be swimming because they're, the women are all made up with their hair and makeup.
Yep.
They're in a bathing suit and a sarong or something, but they ain't no way going into that pool, you know?
Right. And I think with any adult party that I've been to, and even the ones I've been to in LA, is everyone is so stiff. Everyone, there's so much fronting, and it's so disappointing because it's a party. Like, the whole point of it is fun. But everyone is trying to pretend to be someone that they aren't. So,
well, you'll be glad to know that I've gone to many parties in Los Angeles with waterproof eyeliner or waterproof mascara on, but I don't have any other makeup on because I am going to swim and I'm going to go swimming like after I get a drink and then I'm going to have a drink and I'm going swimming.
Yes.
And I know I'll have the whole pool to myself.
Yes.
It is a little, I am self-conscious because I know people are looking at me like, what's happening over there?
Right.
Oh, there's someone swimming? Wait, what?
Right.
Whoa, she's a good swimmer. Oh, I think she, you know, and then there'll be a conversation about you, but then they'll quickly move on. But for a minute, it will be uncomfortable. You just have to get through it.
It's the same thing with like dance parties where no one wants to dance. I'll be the first one out there with a bunch of other nerdy people just dancing away. And some people will look at you and like, ew, gross. Oh, what are you doing? You're looking so stupid. You know, But we're the only ones having fun. And then sometimes people will come up to us and they'll be like, it looks like you're having too much fun over here. And it's just like, isn't that the point? Like,
yeah,
is that the
people
point?
People will come over and say like, whoa, 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 what's going on over in this area? It's like, well, we're all at a party, aren't we? Okay, but wait. So what I want to get back to, of course, is, so you felt the rejection, but wasn't that racism or, in your opinion, how do those two words jive together, rejection and racism?
Well, I think the rejection was both it wasn't even the rejection of them. It was the rejection of me, that I was rejecting myself, that I felt I had to play myself down or lie about my own race in order to get accepted.
What do they call it? A lie of, you omitted a lie, omitting a lie. In other words, you didn't say anything.
Right. I didn't say anything, but I was denying who I was.
For sure. Yeah. A lie of omission. That's it.
A lie of omission. Yeah. And you know, there were other times in my life where I had that choice again. And most of the time I made the choice of me, but it's like, it's really hard for anyone when you like compromise something, you don't realize you're making that compromise when you make that decision, right? The first time you take a job that you hate, but you need the money, right? Like there's always something that you're giving up and then you don't realize it. And then you have a choice. Oh, do I listen to my truth and walk away? Or do I just get accepted because I just want to be liked?
Well, a lot of times people find safety in what is predictable. So at least if they can predict feeling like not part of the crowd, or if they know that's going to happen, they would rather just be in that comforting space than have to take a chance and maybe go off on a limb or speak their truth or, you know, leave the pack and say, I don't want that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's sad because there's some really fascinating, weird people out there that have some
interesting things to say, but instead they're pushing all that down in order to just conform to normalcy, which is so boring. It's just so boring. Why do you want to live that life?
No, it is really boring. And I remember someone once told me, some people talk about people. Other people talk about something. And then the other people talk about ideas.
Ideas.
I'd rather listen to somebody's ideas
exactly
than them gossiping or rumoring exactly or talking about things that are completely out of their control. And I feel the same way, not just about like the Kardashian culture and that kind of stuff that I know nothing really. I mean, I know about it enough, but I don't, whatever. I'm not saying I'm better than anybody because I know or don't know. I mean, I know all about the Tiger King and I feel completely guilty about that. But my point is like, I feel the same way about sports. You know, I kind of like sports for a minute, like professional sports on TV. Right. And I'm from Pittsburgh, so football was a big deal. But at the end of the day, that sport has nothing to do with me. And that outcome's going to go down whether I'm here or not. And I giving it too much attention. And when I see some people watching, like recently, I don't know if you've noticed this, but like, there's a lot of sports on right now.
There is. There's a lot of escapism on right now.
But is it like the Olympics or what's going on?
I think people just need to escape. And
no, but for real, it's NFL, NHL.
Baseball, NBA.
Tennis.
Yeah. Tour de France just ended. Like, yeah, all of it.
So there's so many sports happening now. And I feel like people, it is an escape. But if you watch too many sports, then you're filling your mind with stuff that you cannot control.
Right, right.
So what if you change that up? And I don't know.
I feel that way about personalities
are going too much off the celebrity deep end. And then I feel the same way about sports. Or maybe that's what it all is. Unfortunately, now we all kind of have to think about politics. So we don't have to, but if we want to be citizens, if we care about our democracy, we kind of have to. I want to go back to the times where I didn't even think about politics. I want to be, I never wanted to do politics. That wasn't my job. That was their job.
Right.
I'll entertain you on Sunday nights with the story where the hour of power and with a podcast. You do the governing part. But now I feel like we have to address that. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, going back to what you said earlier is I am more fascinated in finding out the strange things about someone than finding out what they do for a living. So instead of asking people what they do for a living, I ask people what mischief have they recently caused? Because I'm interested in that. I'm interested in the adventures because people are fascinating when they allow themselves to be. And I'm just tired of us trying to pretend that we're something that we're not. And I learned that when I was like sitting in that poll being like, why did I want acceptance from these people that I won't even be thinking about in a year? And I ask this question a lot where I'm always asking like, who are you trying to impress? Like when you're doing something, who are you trying to impress? Are you trying to impress your parents? Are you trying to impress your colleagues? Like, if it's not someone that you actually respect, that you're going to that you care about their opinion in a year from now, then why are we doing this in the first place?
There's also a good example of that when you take a person, right? Like if they have no makeup on, their hair is done, like me right now, I have no makeup, no hair, but you can picture me if I had on a gown or, you know what I mean? Or like people who are always made up and like, I think about like that one Spice Girl who always has that mean look or whatever. It's like, you don't think I can picture you wearing a t-shirt and, you know, being on an island? Like I can picture you any way you want. Like,
exactly.
I know you can wear a gown and I also know you take a bath and you get wet or whatever. You know who we are.
Right.
Everybody knows about hair and makeup and we all know the tricks. So what is the big surprise?
Well, this is why I appreciated what the quarantine times did is because it leveled the playing field for everyone. So you started seeing celebrities at their home on, you know, their crappy Zoom calls. And you were like, oh, they're just like me. I'm not as impressed by you anymore. You know,
isn't it funny when you see like a celebrity's home and you'll see like a box of cereal in the back or like a can, you know, a jar of salt or whatever. You'll see like, oh, a juice or, you know, a carton of milk. And you'll be like, huh? Well, that's very interesting because I have that juice
exactly
in my refrigerator right now.
Exactly. Exactly. Or if you do see a perfect background, you're like, you're lying. I know that's not your background. I know that's not true. I know you You paid for that Zoom background. That's not real.
Let me ask you a couple more things. We got to wrap it up.
Yeah.
First of all, why is it so funny when we say childhood names in the full names? Why is that so funny?
I think it's funny because, like, it just takes us back to that time when we would make fun of people's names, right? Like, yeah. Like my name's Jeff Harry, okay? When I was a kid, every year a new bully would come to this realization. It's like, hey, Jeff, if your first name was Richard, we could call you Harry Dick. And that's where I got my humor from, because that was my nickname from third grade all the way through high school.
Oh my gosh.
So like people like to say, they're like, what's up, Jeff Harry? You know, like they're just like, you know, we have to say that whole, you know, you get that whole feeling because you don't say it later on, you know? You know, like, what's up, Christine Blackburn? You don't say that now.
You know, there's one little friend I have, my daughter's little friend. Her name is Fiona. And she always says, hello, Christine Blackburn. I'll say, hi, Fiona. How is it going? Oh, pretty good, Christine Blackburn. She always says my name. I laugh so hard. Hey, what does Vincentian mean?
Oh, so my dad's from the small island of St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and it's off the coast of Barbados. So there's only 100,000 people on that island. And he was, I think, the first doctor to make it in the U.S. from that
That's
island.
Awesome.
Yeah.
How do you say it?
St. Vincent. St. Vincent and the Grenadines.
But what did you say? Vincentian. What is
so,
that?
Yeah. So I'm Vincentian.
I never heard that my whole life.
Yeah. Yeah. And then people from Barbados are
barbarians. Barbarians. That's exactly what I thought.
Bajans. They're called Bajans. But, you know, if you want to rock it that way.
And you keep saying the little triangle note. That was called a football.
Oh, well, it was a football to me, but not to the girls that I dated. No, it was the triangle note.
I still,
you know,
say you add that to your story because everybody knows what the football was. Because you flicked
it. Oh, the football? The
you
football
flick it.
Note?
Yeah.
I would always flip
I'd like
it.
To see you add that to your story.
Okay.
I'd also like to see you add the beach towel around your neck, if you would, please.
So as I threw the beach towel around my neck, and then here comes racism.
Honestly, that's the turn. That's the turn.
That is the turn.
Holy shit.
That's the turn.
No kidding.
That is the
turn.
Oh
my gosh. What a crazy time we're living, man.
Yeah. Seriously.
We need you, Jeff Harry.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate
that. I'm so
that.
Glad to meet you, man. I really am. Thank you.
Thank you so much for making this a reality.
This is super cool. And let's definitely have you on the Hour of Power. I'll send you dates, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks again.
All right, you guys. I got to wrap it up. This was a fascinating episode. Super fun. You wrote me in the notes something like, I'm not a comedian, but I'm funny or something. And I'm like, yeah, right. But you are. You're really funny.
Woo!
Don't forget to check out Jeff's website, rediscoveryourplay.com, and then find him over on YouTube as well, because he does have a lot of really funny, quick, snappy YouTube videos. And then you have a lot of creative videos with other people and mm-hmm. learning, and other people talk too. So it's not always just you. Not that I don't want to see you, but I'm just saying you have a team, I think, or something.
Yeah, no. I do interviews where we talk about really awkward conversations. So I just did an interview where someone is a white person whisperer and they know how to talk to white people in a certain way. So like I interviewed them about that. It was so interesting.
Wait, what did they say? And what was their background?
I think she was Bangladeshi, but she just felt like she was just like, no, I can connect with them. Like I understand them, you know? And I was like, oh, tell me, I need to understand. And she broke it down. Like,
wait, what did she say? This is so funny.
I mean, now I'm forgetting, but it was a lot about like, especially white women love perfection.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, are in the perfection space. Like, and that's why it's so painful to watch those commercials of, you know, white women always cleaning. And it's just like, gosh, there's so much pressure to be perfect all the time. Like I run my business and I have a perfect home and I have a perfect child. And that's why it's also hard for a lot of white women to participate right now in some of the, you know, the Black Lives Matters movement because they're so worried about making mistakes.
That's exactly right. That is so on the nose. Boy, I like that girl already. That is so on the nose. And it's so funny as, because I'm from Pittsburgh and I've come a very middle class area, et cetera. And there's so much fear around whether it's, you know, people of different color or people of different languages, or of course, you know, transgender would be totally psychotic to them, mm-hmm. or whatever. Not everybody, but I'm just saying. And so when they do accept, it's kind of funny. Like my mom, she's elderly, but she'll say now something like, oh, yeah, Chrissy, he's a homosexual. And I think that's just fine.
And just the fact that they say that, I'm like, I'm totally fine with it.
No problem.
No problem at all.
So anyway, it's just funny. And she's spot on. That's really funny. All right, you guys, don't forget to head over to Jeff's website, rediscoveryourplay.com. This has been so much fun. Thank you again, Jeff.
Thanks so much. This has been awesome.
All right, you guys, my name is Christine Blackburn saying make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Story Worthy on iTunes and visit the Story Worthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.